Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Again, please don't call me arrogant, because what I'm saying is true. I'm European champion, so I'm not one of the bottle. I think I'm a special one.
Hello, hello. Welcome to more comedians talking about football. This week I'm talking to Graham Coolum about Chelsea FC. Now, Graham is a good friend of mine. He's become a bit of a mentor to me, actually, during my time on the comedy circuit. And he also gave me my first ever paid gig, which, when we bring that up in our chat, sounds like he may be expecting a refund for that spot. Graham is a bit of a comedy veteran as well. He was on the circuit around the late 80s and early 90s before taking a 15-year break and then returning and now running one of the most, well, personally, I say one of the best nights in West Berkshire, the Hungerford Comedy Club. Brilliant night. If you can get there, do go. During his time on the circuit, he gigged with the likes of Mickey Flanagan, Graham Norton, and even did a gig at the Comedy Store with Steve Coogan. And he actually tells us a bit about that Coogan gig and a chat they had, which was quite interesting. Anyway, let's listen to a bit of Graham in action.
I make love to my wife, who's a teacher. So we make love according to Ofsted principles. No, I don't mean by that I get half an afternoon's notice. And then we have the inspectors in. What it is... Oh, sorry?
Is it outstanding or requires improvement?
So it does require improvement, but if I ever get to be outstanding and have a big banner on the fence outside my house... Sorry, thanks for trying to ruin my joke. Wait, very good. Are you a teacher? Are you a teacher by any chance? Yes, he is. So you know the routine, if you want to say anything. It's your own time, your waste.
When I asked Graham to come on to talk about Chelsea, he said to me, Sam, do you know what? I don't think I'm the right person to come on your podcast. I don't go to games like I used to. I'm not sure if I'm the right kind of fan. But actually, I think Graham is the perfect football fan. See, Graham, he might not get to the games like he used to be able to, but he goes to women's matches, he goes to youth matches, and he's got his eye on talent coming through the youth academies. He's got a real interest and a real love for Chelsea, which you'll discover in this episode. Now, I will say at this point, this is actually the last episode I recorded before the lockdown. And I actually, when I was editing, I found this little bit near the end where we're talking about the rule that came in at the time of recording this about no handshakes.
We didn't need to do the handshake because it was... We should be handshaking at the moment anyway, what with coronavirus.
No.
You can't see it or hear it on the thing, so I'm not sure I did that.
Little did we know that just a few days later we'd be cut off from the entire world. But still, anyway, this was a really fun episode to record, so I'm going to get straight in. This is Graham Coolum talking about Chelsea FC.
So I'm here with Graham. Graham, thanks for coming on the podcast, mate.
Come on, you Blues.
So how long have you been a Chelsea fan?
I think it dates back to 1970. It must do, the 1970 Cup Final, Chelsea Leeds. I I can't remember the cup final specifically, but I can remember an evening watching black and white telly and being aware of a team in white and a team in grey, basically. Yeah. And it would either have been the Chelsea-Real Madrid 71 European Cup Winners' Cup final, but I think I was already a Chelsea fan by then, so I think it must have been the Man United at Old Trafford replay from 1970 Cup final.
That's mad they used to have replays for Cup finals. You couldn't imagine it in the modern game, could you?
I think it was probably extra time in both as well, you know, so it's the longest Cup final of the lot.
I'm always kind of jealous when people have got kind of memories of that era of football, because it's back then when an FA Cup final was such a huge event.
It really did mean something then, didn't it? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was the nation stopped. It was the only football on telly, basically, wasn't it? I mean, I don't think we even had, well, we wouldn't have had live World Cups, I don't think, because they wouldn't have had the technology to do the beaming from overseas. So
you probably might have got like an England game or something, but these days you can pick any game at any time.
And if you've got the contract with whoever, you can, yeah, absolutely.
So, because I find it mad now. I mean, I love the FA Cup. It is still my favourite competition. And, you know, I haven't had much to cheer of it. You know, I think Reading have only ever got to the semi-finals once or twice. And one of those times was in my lifetime. The other one was back in the 1920s. We got to the semi-final, and I found it a little bit strange that everyone talks about that semi-final as if it's a final, because they now hold the semi-finals at Wembley.
Yeah.
That's not a good thing, is it?
No, I was a fan, really, of the sort of neutral ground in the middle somewhere. Mm. And really just for the fans as much as anything. And obviously for a Chelsea fan, going to Wembley's no problem from a logistical perspective. It's better to go to Wembley than it is to go to Villa Park, say.
Yeah.
But you've got to feel for the fan that's coming up from Southampton or coming down from Newcastle or down from Liverpool or whatever. You know, but the travelling fan, well, the fan at the ground really counts for nothing these days, do they? Let's be honest.
No, it's a shame. I mean, I just can't get my head around the whole semi-final at Wembley thing. I really can't. I mean, there's not like they couldn't still do the neutral ground thing. You've got beautiful grounds.
Absolutely.
Now. You've got, you know, West Ham, Tottenham. You've still got Old Trafford. You've still got, you know, Manchester City's ground. You've got all these grounds up and down the country that you could use as a neutral ground. That would be a nice place to go.
Yeah.
And it just kind of takes that special final feeling away from it.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I think Wembley's the destination for the final. But then, I mean, Spurs were playing their home matches at Wembley for a season, weren't they? So it's forever tainted, in my view, by that, really. So as a Chelsea fan, much as we love going there, much as we love going anywhere to beat Spurs, it's still Wembley ought to be the special place, really.
Oh, I agree. Did you ever get to Old Wembley or any of the big Chelsea games yourself?
Sadly not, no. I mean, I am a bit of an imposter as far as that's concerned. I was born and brought up in Lincolnshire, so, I mean, opportunities when I was a kid to get to see Chelsea were very, very few and far between. I think my first Chelsea game actually was against Carlisle in the old First Division. And those of you old enough to remember will know that Carlisle had a brief flirtation with the very top of the First Division. And they hurt us. But, actually, no, that's not true. I think, having mentioned Spurs, I think the game that I saw was Carlisle against Spurs. But I was actually in Carlisle still for a holiday, visiting family when Chelsea played Carlisle and lost, so that was a pretty awful thing. But yeah, no, over the years I haven't been to many Chelsea games, but I did go to a Chelsea game on my honeymoon, so that's not bad.
Where was that?
We stayed at Stamford Bridge, so it's Chelsea Swansea.
Oh, fantastic. How did Fiona feel about that?
She was absolutely fine about it, yeah, because she wanted to go to London.
Right.
And we looked at various hotel options in and around London, a couple of places that she knew of already, compared prices, and to be perfectly honest, the hotels at Chelsea were very competitive. The match day package was obviously a bit more expensive. But yeah, we went for that, and it was great, actually. It was really great. I mean, I'm not just saying that as a Chelsea fan. The whole experience was fabulous. Oh, well, I know. I was at Reading for the pre-match.
That's it, with Chelsea.
You went
to the pre-season.
Yeah, the Medeski game. Yeah. They're always quite fun pre-season, aren't they? Don't you think?
Because nothing matters.
It's two different teams, as in your own side feels two different teams, first half, second half. And so you watch two entirely different halves. And I wonder what the purpose of them is, really, because if you're the kid that's sort of trying to break through and prove yourself, but you're not playing against the same people that the established player is playing against in the first half, what does your performance really stand for?
That is true.
So I feel for any young player, to be perfectly honest. I mean, it's a bit like comedy, isn't it? You can do a great gig in a place, it doesn't really matter.
Mm.
And you can do a really bad gig in a place where you want to do well.
Yeah. A lot of people who do comedy can relate to that.
You can be on a bill with somebody that you don't particularly rate, and yet they have an absolute storming gig.
Yeah.
And you can have a great gig yourself against somebody who's well established, but you know darn well that they are still going to get the booking next time. It's not going to be you. So any player sort of coming through the ranks, how you sort of break through and really establish yourself. I've got a lot of respect for anybody who makes a career out of it.
Well, it's funny you mention the younger players, because one of the questions I was going to ask you is about what Frank Lampard's done at the moment with the young players at Chelsea. It must be an exciting time to be a Chelsea fan.
It's really lovely, actually, from my point of view, because I have watched an awful lot of the youth team games over the last few years.
Yeah.
You get to see them live on Chelsea TV. I've been to more youth games, perhaps youth cup finals and that kind of thing, maybe than I've seen the senior squad. So I really genuinely have seen the likes of Tammy Abraham, Mason Mount, Reece James coming through from the age of sort of 16, 15, 16. And we've had so many good youngsters come through. And again, how anybody decides that player A is worthy of the first team and player B needs to be shipped off to, I don't want to name anybody's club and upset you, but so you know a team. You've got John Swift at Reading, right? Now in Chelsea's youth team, he used to partner Lewis Baker in the midfield.
Right.
I thought both of those two had an absolute future.
We had Lewis Baker as well.
You had him for a while, didn't you?
Because I know John Swift went to Brentford, and then we bought him from Brentford on permanent. And then we had Lewis Baker for a short time for last season. It was actually 2000. And
I think he joined you from Leeds, didn't he? I think he'd been to Leeds.
Yeah, I think so. He'd been somewhere before, and then we only got him online.
He's been in Holland.
But yeah, you're right. And we did have a couple of players. They've gone out of my mind now. But especially around the time that, first of all, when we had the short time we had Brendan Rodgers.
Yeah.
We had Ryan Bertrand back then. You know, he had links to Chelsea, of course, through Mourinho, and he brought in some players there. So I know what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah. And so the likes of John Swift. You know, I really, from my perspective as just a fan, not a coach, I'd watch these youth team games, and clearly they're playing against other 17, 18-year-olds, so it's not the same as coming up against, Jordan Henderson playing for Liverpool or whatever. But those two looked like they were going to be definite stars for the future. They played so well in a lot of the youth team games, scored some great goals between them, long-range efforts, Baker often. And yet, you know, Lewis Baker really hasn't featured for anybody. I think Swift gets regular games for Reading.
I think Lewis Baker, he's on loan again somewhere at the moment.
I think
he might be abroad.
Germany somewhere.
That's right. But it is nice to see, because I feel like for too long, and I might be wrong, you know, I'm not a Chelsea fan, but it seemed to me for too long they were looking at trying to compete with, Manchester City. I mean, you won the Champions League in 2012.
Yeah.
You know, fantastic that was. I remember watching that and I thought it was well deserved. And I really like Di Matteo.
Yeah,
I think he replaced AVB.
That's it.
And won the Champions League. And, of course, in typical Chelsea fashion, he was sacked a couple of games into the next season.
That's unfortunately the case. Yeah, he didn't have a great start in the league, bless him.
That's right.
I think it was inevitable in a way, unfortunately.
But you know, an ex-player becoming manager and winning the Champions League.
Fantastic.
Wonderful.
It was fantastic.
So then, since then, the rise of Manchester City, the amount of money that's coming to the Premier League, not just the money. City, elsewhere. Yeah. And it seems to me that Chelsea for so long were trying to compete on that level, and there was frustration from the fans that they weren't spending the kind of money, they weren't buying in those kind of players that, you know, the Manchester Cities were bringing in. But it seems that what they've done now is... they bought in Frank Lampard, and I was a real doubter of Frank Lampard. Yeah. Having seen him at Derby, and I just thought, really, he's getting, you know, to the final of the playoffs, really worthy of becoming the next Chelsea manager. And I thought, oh, Chelsea fans weren't like this. But the response, mainly because of, you know, obviously you know what it's like having Frank Lampard in your team, it was quite positive, which surprised me. But then what pleased me most is that he has done well with them, you know, especially with what he had. There was the embargo that came in, so therefore... he put the youth team in and some young players, the ones you've mentioned, Tammy Abrahams and the like. And I think it's been a really, really exciting season. If I was a Chelsea fan, I'd be very happy.
Yeah, I am very happy. I mean, it's other than the fact that I think, in the way of football, a lot of the performances have not been sort of reflected in the results. So we've had some shocking results, actually, in games where... we really have been the better team and really should have won, you know, under normal circumstances. But football's just got too many examples over the years of the team that defends resolutely, gets a little bit of luck, gets the odd deflection here and there, and then, you know, a defender who's never going to score another goal in his entire career pops up and scores an absolute screamer from 90 yards or, you know, from his own corner flag or something stupid. And whilst we haven't quite experienced that this season, I think we have had just too many instances of, well, that had never happened again, but it's cost us the game. You know, it hasn't even cost us a draw, it's cost us the match. So, yes, across the piece, I'm actually really pleased with what's going on, and I hope that this season is an education for the young lads and that they, you know, get better and improve and so on. And where we finish, I mean, okay, we're fourth at the moment. We could still finish 10th. You know, it's so bunched up at the top there.
It's mad there, isn't it?
But I think even at the start of the season, if you'd said, well, look, you know, a lot of kids coming through, it's going to be rough, it's going to be a tricky ride, and you're actually going to finish 10th. I'd probably have said, okay, I'll take that because of what they're going to learn, and I believe they'll be better next season.
Well, that's the thing you've got as well, is that this isn't... with such a young team, this is surely building for what could be a really exciting future.
I hope so.
Who are kind of, you know, 18, 19, 20,
keep
hold of them, keep them playing as a team.
Yeah.
Lampard seems to get on with them all very well. He's built a good squad there.
Yeah.
You think maybe not next season, but the season after, they could be really, they could be up there.
I think even next season, I mean, you know, we went toe-to-toe with Liverpool in the league and in the World Club Championship. No, the European thing, wasn't it? Not the World Club Championship. It was the two European Cup and Europa League winners. And lost the league match, but to be honest, I think we were at least worthy of a draw. In the European final thing, I think we were probably the better team.
Mm.
So, notwithstanding the fact that we've had the FA Cup result, you know, where Klopp fielded some of his youngsters as well, so I'm not taking too much from that, grateful though I am for the victory.
I was going to say, because Chelsea beat Liverpool 2-0 in the FA Cup, with what had been the amazing team, you know, they're the best team in Britain at the moment, Liverpool, that must have still felt like a real victory, considering, yes, he may have put out some younger players, Klopp, but still that was Chelsea's youth.
Yeah.
Beat Liverpool's youth easily.
Yeah. It did feel great. It did feel great. And but the most pleasing aspect of it from me as a fan is I watched the entire game knowing the result. Mm. Having watched it live, then I watched it knowing the result. And so it gives you the chance to look at what players are doing and perhaps notice things that you don't notice in the heat of the game itself. And I was just really impressed, actually, by the work rate and the effort and the decision making. So in football, again, you know, the result doesn't always reflect the game. But I actually felt in this game that we were worthy of the win, and I was really pleased about the effort they put in.
Oh, brilliant. And as I said, against Klopp's Liverpool this year,
yeah,
that's a real
thing. Yeah, because his team work hard. His team work hard, and, you know, it could have gone the other way. Liverpool had the first real chance of the game if they score it, which has kind of been what's happened to us a few times this season. The opposition have had, I mean, against Arsenal, 2-2 draw. They had two shots on goal. They scored two goals. Mm. You know, that's a bit rubbish, really, isn't it? But... Liverpool, credit to Liverpool, they've been great, but I think they've ridden their luck a little bit this season as well, to be fair.
VAR might have helped them out in a few ways.
So not in terms of giving decisions that shouldn't have been given, because VAR largely is getting it right, but yes, without VAR they'd have conceded a few more goals. They might not have scored some of the goals that they scored.
Chelsea. It's a positive time to be a Chelsea
fan.
Yeah,
I think it is. I think it is. Whether they'll ever quite be good enough to win the league, you know, because City are still going to come piling in with the money. And, you know, every club tries to get better. But, I mean, I remember Chelsea being bottom of the old second division. So
I'm
a pig in muck all the time at the moment.
From kind of the positivity of the future,
yeah.
Let's go back to kind of, you said you became a fan in the 70s, yeah. Right at the beginning of the 70s.
Yeah.
What's your kind of early memories of Chelsea from back in the day, back when the shed at Stamford Bridge was a shed?
I think my early memories really are just being disappointed and desperate. I mean, there was a time when Chelsea were building their old West Stand, and they piled... Was it the West End or the East End? I do forget now. But, I mean, they'd piled a load of money into developing that bit of the bridge, and it left them without any money at all. And then when the team got relegated and, you know, things looked really, really bleak. So actually, my memory of supporting Chelsea all the way through till the late 90s is that things looked really rough, actually. Well, no, actually, the late 80s, things looked really rough till the late 80s, and then they started to improve. Hoddle made a big difference. John McNeil first, and then Hoddle, and so on. But
who were the players you really looked to back then? Who did you really admire?
Well, in the 70s, everybody loved Osgood. I think I had a bit of a fondness for Charlie Cook, but I fancied myself as a bit of a goalkeeper. So, so Peter Bonetti was always my childhood hero.
Yeah.
And he was the person that I thought I could be, clearly not. But yeah. And then, you know, people like Alan Hudson. I don't think I really appreciated Alan Hudson other than knowing about him and knowing him as a young player coming through the ranks. And then when the likes of Hudson and Osgood left us, you know, that felt like a really bad time as a young fan. I sort of realizing that these two glorious gods of the team were moving on. And then Ray Wilkins, when he came through, I mean, that was another youth team period, you know, a lot of young lads coming through. So I was a big fan of Wilkins and some of the lesser-known players, people like John Sparrow and John Bumstead, who non-Chelsea fans won't even remember existed. But, I mean, Bumstead played, I don't know, probably 300-plus games for the club, something like that. Just one of these ever-present characters. Then Dixon and Speedy, you know, through that era, they were great for us. Gavin Peacock, when he came through, he was obviously bought in, but he was great for us. And then, yeah, well, we're not quite in the modern era, but, you know, you've got the revolution that started when all the foreign players started coming in.
In around the 90s.
And the Di Matteos and the Zolas and the... The births.
Was that when it got really exciting? When Chelsea... Because in my memory, I'm 30 and I only remember Chelsea being a big team.
Yeah.
So kind of the idea of them being bottom of Division 2, you know, obviously now the Championship.
Yeah.
I can't imagine it. I can't imagine... No. You know, I've even seen Manchester United to an extent drop, you know, from their standards. But Chelsea have always kind of been up there. They've always looked like a tight, kind of safe top
Premiership team, and so the idea they were down there is crazy. And my memory, of course, was the kind of the 90s when it all started to change. Started to pick up some silverware.
That's it. Well, we got to the cup final in 94, and losing that to Man United, especially in the way that we did, referee was pretty shocking on the day.
Yeah.
We were a bit unlucky. We hit the bar. Gavin Peacock mentioned him before, hit the bar before United scored, and then they scored four. You know, at that point, having won nothing for years and years and years, it feels like, well, that's it. That's our, in my lifetime, that is going to be the one and only opportunity that I get to see Chelsea win something.
Yeah.
And it's not just that we haven't won, but we lost in just such appalling fashion.
Yeah.
But then we got to 97, and that was the year that we won the FA Cup under Hullett. And I mean, that was just glorious. It was one of those things that I thought I would never see.
Yeah, because at that point, see, to me, that was just kind of early Chelsea. It's when I just went to football. But for you, who'd supported them down in the bottom of Division Two, that must have felt such a rise from the, you know, Phoenix from the flames.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't know who's bottom of the Championship at the moment, but the likes of a Coventry City who've been big, have gone all the way down, and are now trying to get their way back up again. You know, I obviously can't promise a Coventry City fan that the same thing is going to happen, but it is what every fan lives for, isn't it? In a way that, you know, although we're a bit rubbish at the moment, that next year we might be better, and next year we might be better still, and one of these days we'll have a good run in a cup competition or something.
Well, then the year after that, obviously the FA Cup, you won the European Cup Winners' Cup, which I believe now is the version of, you know, the Europa Cup, basically.
Yeah.
So then that was then kind of making a step into Europe.
Yeah.
Do you think it was that kind of being noticed again on the big stage that then brought in the money that came around in 2004 when the club was bought out?
I guess it must have been. I mean, I think it was crucial, wasn't it, that Chelsea beat Liverpool on, if it wasn't the last day of the season, it must have been the...
It was back when Ranieri was...
So Ranieri was still manager, and we got a 2-1 victory over Liverpool, which was really important, and I think probably key to the decision that Abramovich made to go for Chelsea Abramovich rather than Liverpool, is what I've heard. Obviously, he doesn't confide in me.
Who scored that goal? I think, was it Lampard?
The two goal scorers on that day were Jesper Gronkar and Marcel Desailly, I think.
Okay. And it was, they call it like the £1 billion goal or something, because of that decision that might have been triggered because of it.
I believe that's the case. So, I mean, we were always sort of there and thereabouts at that time. We were making the right kind of moves, but we were never going to be a league winner, I don't think. And, you know, Mourinho has his critics. He has his critics amongst Chelsea fans even. Yeah. But I think he really did bring a belief and a change of attitude and a change of state of mind with that group of players.
Yeah,
basically.
Again, you've got a lot of youngsters coming through the ranks as well. Well, I suppose Lampard had come from West Ham, but
he was
still a very young player.
He was still a very young player,
The likes of John Terry,
Jody Morris was still around, I think. Oh, no, I think Morris actually probably left as Mourinho
just
arrived.
That in your mind, is Mourinho the special one?
Well, he only ever called himself, I'm really insistent on this, only ever called himself a special one.
Right, okay.
So
it's like that kind of the misquoted of life always said life is like a box of chocolates. Like the quote isn't quite that.
That's, you know, exactly right.
Luke, I'm your father. It's no, I'm your father. You've got to get that quote right. And he's kind of lived off that name, hasn't he? The special
one. I think he's both reveled in it and been damaged by it.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
And it does make me a little bit cross that the press went with the special one when he did say, I am a special one. And he was at that time, he was a special one in the sense that not many managers had done what he had done.
Mm.
And I think in that period as well, he was very definitely a special one. I think the kinds of things that he was probably doing, a lot of the old school managers probably weren't. And now in the modern game, a lot of managers and coaches are probably doing those things and more. So whether Mourinho still qualifies to be thought of as a special one or not, I don't know, because I think others are proving themselves to be equally as good. Yeah. But I do think he changed the face of what was happening in the Premier League at the time.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And that was kind of the time when the top four came in, you know, Liverpool, Man United, Arsenal, Chelsea. And
yeah.
There was the big fight between those four, which was some exciting years. So how must have been amazing at that point. We talked about the rise of them in the 90s, but by this point you'd gone from in 20 years, you were a fan 20 years before all this, and suddenly there they were at the top, getting into the Champions League, winning the Premier League.
Yeah.
How, do you remember when they won the Premier League?
Oh, I do, yeah.
How did that feel?
So for the... it was a bit like Liverpool this year, but without quite the margin, you know.
Yeah.
For months, people had been saying,
it's coming.
Chelsea, well, they're going to win it, aren't they? Mm. They're going to win it. So every week, you're facing a game thinking, oh, just don't mess it up, don't mess it up, please just win. And they kept winning, and they kept winning, and they kept winning. And it was fabulous. I was in the hatchet in Newbury.
Yeah.
And I just remember hugging some random other Chelsea fan, you know, on the game where it was confirmed. Yeah. And we went our separate ways, and it just felt, again, I just can't believe this has happened in my lifetime. I could remember myself as a sort of 12, 13-year-old boy promising that if I became a millionaire, mind you, you know, that I would, at a time when Chelsea was selling all their best players and for like £200,000, a million pounds was going to buy you five great players. Okay. So I remember promising that if I ever became a millionaire, which I never have,
right,
I would give Chelsea this £1 million and we'd buy some great players and we would, you know, we would go on to bigger and better things.
And
Abramovich came along and did all that for me. I didn't have to spend a penny.
And, fantastic.
It was just one of those kind of life affirming for me. Obviously, every other fan for every other team.
Like, this is why I supported them.
But
from day
yeah,
one.
Exactly. You know, God, I've waited however many years it was for this, and it's happened, and I can't quite believe it. But it's lovely. I'm going to enjoy it. And that was the other thing, because a lot of people even then were saying, oh, Chelsea have bought the title. And well, they kind of had. I agree with that. They kind of had. But it wasn't like we came from nowhere.
Yeah.
We'd been pretty decent under Ranieri. We'd been pretty decent under Hoddle and so on, and Hullett and Vialli and so on.
Yeah, of course.
So we had been building to that. But clearly Abramovich put the cream and the cherry and the chocolate shavings on top of the cake, didn't he? I mean, absolutely.
Drop it, Dennis. A moment to savour. Remember 94 when he was on the losing side. Steve Clark, what a fitting end then to his 10 years of service at Chelsea. Mark Hughes, well, he's seen it all before, but this will mean as much to him as all those earlier successes, I'm sure.
So let's go back to back down at the bottom of Division 2, sort of in the 80s, because that's around the time you took up comedy.
Oh, well, let's think. Yes, I probably won Skegness Find a Star.
That's where it all started, Skegness Find a Star.
Skegness Find a Star in something like university years, 82 to 85. So it's probably 84, 85, somewhere there. So, yes, from tragedy. From tragedy comes comedy. It's usually the way, isn't it?
Well, you had some, like, I've always been fascinated with your kind of early years in stand-up, because you took a long break.
Yeah.
So you did it in the kind of the mid-80s until...
Well, yeah, so I didn't really do an awful lot in the mid-80s, to be fair.
Was it the early 90s?
So it was really after my dad died, and I decided to take a show to Edinburgh in 91.
Right.
A completely wrong way around to do this. Most people sort of actually get themselves a bit of a grounding in comedy and then decide to do an Edinburgh right. show like 5 years later. And I was a big enough egoist to think that I could do it the wrong way round, which clearly I couldn't. Although, to be fair, it was not a bad show, the 91 show.
Was that Death of the Poll Tax?
So that was Accidental Death of the Poll Tax, yeah.
Topical at the time.
It was at the time, yeah, so, and it went very well.
And then you did the circuit for a while, and then how long did you stop for?
I must have stopped for... Sorry, that's an awful sound for the radio, isn't it?
That's fine.
Well, probably 12... Blimey. 20, no, even longer than that. I don't know. What year is it now? What year is it now?
2020.
So I started again in 2013. Yeah, maybe even 15 years or something. Yeah.
I'm always fascinated to hear about your kind of the early days on the circuits, because you did quite a lot of gigs around London back then. And you talked about some of the acts you perform with. I mean, the likes of Mickey Flanagan, Graham Norton.
Yeah.
I mean, you tell a story about a young Steve Coogan kind of confiding in you about how he wants to give up.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, I got an open spot at the Comedy Store in its old venue.
Yeah.
And Steve Coogan was on, and he was brilliant, as you might expect. I don't think he was headlining. I don't know. He must have opened, I think. Mm. And so just as he was packing his... I remember him having a bag with him. I remember him packing his bag, presumably carrying the obligatory notebook that you know all comedians have to carry. And I would have said to him something like, oh, that was great. You know, brilliant, well done, you know. And he said, I must have asked him if he was enjoying it or, you know, something of the kind.
Yeah.
And he said, well, I'm really looking to do something different. I'm trying to move this on a bit. It's not, you know, I don't really want to be doing this. And that was about the long and the short of it. Mm. But I think that would have predated him doing his character stuff.
Yeah. Because he kind of did impressions.
Yes, he was very much an impressionist.
Well.
Yes, I did at the time.
Quite a thing in the like late 80s, early 90s. You saw that quite a lot in stand-up. Not so much now.
Yes, you don't see it so much now, do you? I don't know whether... I don't quite know why that is.
Well, I remember asking why you don't do your impressions anymore, and you said...
I probably said they're all dead now, did I?
Or in prison.
Or in prison, yeah. Yeah. Now then, now...
No. Oh, yes, there goes the family-friendly rating. We got all the way through the episode without a swear word, which didn't happen with my previous episodes.
Yeah, no, I try not to swear, but I'm afraid I do know a lot of references from the 70s and 80s. Yeah, I suppose I don't... I'm not close enough to... the culture of the day, really, perhaps to try and do impressions
That's
of
fair.
People these
but you,
days.
But your style now, I kind of can't imagine it. I've seen you sort of drop the odd kind of Prince Philip in there,
yeah,
or something like that. If it's part of the story, but it's not kind of like this is an impression of this.
Yeah, no, it wouldn't really lend itself to that, would it? What I do these days, miserable old man sort of stuff.
Well, let me say that, you know, but you've gone down very popular where you run a comedy night at Hungerford Comedy Club, which I've done there twice and had really good fun, especially the last one, which was absolutely packed to the gills.
Yep.
And I mean, you get good 100 in there, something
like
that?
We're averaging around about 100.
Yeah.
I think the lowest we've had is 70, which isn't bad.
No, that's not bad at all. It's great stuff, and you emcee that, of course.
Yeah.
And you said there's not kind of other stuff going on in Hungerford, but bringing it back to football, you had an interesting event that you were part of for charity night.
Yeah.
And it was with who's now a local, but an ex-Chelsea player.
Is he a local, is he?
Yeah, Terry? Yeah. I think he's only... well, I'm not going to say where he lives, maybe, on the... But I think he's quite local.
Okay, I wasn't aware of that so much. But yes, last year... I was privileged to be part of a fundraising event for a charity called New Life, which is a charity that was set up by a friend of mine who lost children in childbirth and has worked tirelessly since to raise, I think, over $250,000 now for baby units in hospitals. And so he arranged an evening with Kerry Dixon that I was part of, just hosting that night. So, yeah, I mean, they say you shouldn't get to meet your heroes, but actually that was that was pretty all right, meeting Kerry. He was a nice guy.
I was going to say, because you brought his name up earlier when you were talking about the players you kind of looked up to when you were, you know, supporting them in the sort of late 70s, early 80s and stuff. So that I would love to do something like that. I've always thought, oh, that'd be such a fun thing. I think it can be quite a hard gig in some of these kind of
Yes.
things. I've been to a few before and I thought, oh, okay, I'd love to be... I mean, I'd love to say, look, I'm here tonight with Matt Letizia, I'm here with John Barnes or whatever, but at the same time... After a few drinks, after a chippy dinner, the audience can be a little bit leery.
It was very much a football audience, of course, let's say. Yeah. And so, yes, my material...
They're the same as my podcast audience, but luckily I can't hear them. I can't hear them jeering, I can't hear them heckling.
Yeah, no, that's right. I mean, so they were lovely because the majority were Chelsea fans. There was one gooner who'd gone there thinking that it was a night with Lee Dixon rather than Kerry Dixon.
Is that true?
That is true.
Oh, no!
I opened the evening by saying, you know, have we got... I was expecting it to be Chelsea fans, possibly Reading, because that's where Dixon came from. Possibly even Luton. You know, he played for Luton a little while. And did he have a time with Southampton as well, I think? I think he had a brief period with Southampton, I think.
I know he was at Reading for a very small amount of time.
Yeah, so he came to Chelsea from Reading. But yeah, so I opened the evening saying, you know, give us a cheer if you're a Chelsea fan, give us a cheer if you're a Reading fan, and obviously got the cheers from the audience, and then cheer for if you're anything else. A little voice went up to my right-hand side and I asked what it was and his mate stubbed him in.
He thought it was Lee Dixon.
He thought it was Lee Dixon.
Come, we're going to go see Lee Dixon.
That's it. So presumably he'd taken them all along with him, I guess. I don't know.
Well, that was good. That must have been good fun to do, though. I mean,
it was good fun.
I imagine still a little bit nerve-wracking if you're with somebody who... I mean, I find it a bit nerve-wracking when I'm on a comedy night with, you know, an act I really respect and stuff. But I suppose it's quite different when... You know, you're all in the same boat there, but when it's a footballer, you're like, well, I'm the comedian and I'm the funny one here and I've got to kind of relax the audience into your speech. So, but it must have been a good experience.
Yes, it was a great experience. I wasn't the only comedian on the bill, so there was another guy who was much more old style, working men clubs. Which he went down a storm. Yeah, he absolutely did suit that kind of event. That's not to say that there weren't people in the audience who appreciated what I did. You know, they did. But
it's a charity night as well, so it's always nice when it's kind of like, you know, they're there to raise money for something good.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, that was the aspect of the evening though that I found most difficult because I don't really feel comfortable in that kind of let's bid for the next thing.
You know, I
wasn't doing it, but I was just present for it, and it's just not me. I'm not comfortable with that.
Okay. I was going to say, so when did we first meet? We first met. Funnily enough, it's a nice day we're doing this podcast because it almost marks to the day that we first met at a open mic night, which is mixture of spoken word and music. I wouldn't advise doing your first gig there, by the way.
It is mainly music.
And I know a lot of people have done their first gig on a mix of them. Looking back now, you realise that as nice as they can be, or sometimes as bad they can be, it's not a real reflection of a comedy club night. And you very kindly, there and then, offered me my first paid gig.
Yeah.
And I thought, this is easy. I thought that was it. I thought, right, great. I'm obviously the best comedian ever. You came over to me, gave me a business card and said, I'm setting up something at this venue in the summer. I think I'd like you to come down and do some stand-up. And it was really very nice. It gave me a very big confidence boost and it definitely spurred me on to do many other gigs. And here I am now, many, many gigs later. And still going. But I always appreciated that.
Well, that's great. And to be honest, that makes me feel really happy because when you are performing, what you, more than anything, obviously you want your audience to appreciate what you're doing. But it is lovely to get a little bit of external recognition from perhaps one member of the audience who takes the trouble to come up. And I mean, what you don't want to hear is you don't want to hear the, oh mate, I couldn't do that.
That's the one thing people think they want to hear that. Oh, it's so brave. I couldn't do that. What you're saying is then, did I do something that looked really scary?
That's it.
I want to make it look fun, not
exactly,
scary.
Exactly. Yeah. You really don't want to hear somebody say, mate, I couldn't do what you do. I couldn't be that terrible.
I'm sure you'd want to hear that if you were a footballer. Mate, I couldn't do that.
Maybe. I couldn't do those skills. Maybe that's kind of good as a footballer.
Maybe.
But
even still, what they're saying is, I mean, I couldn't go out and miss three open goals and still come back and play for the team next week.
For a lot of money.
That's what they're really saying. So I think that's what they're saying to you as a comedian when they say that. But so I wanted to be the kind of person who would go up to an act at the end and actually be able to say, I'm backing up what I say here, that I actually thought you were pretty good there, by saying, here's a gig.
I watched that paid gig I did for you the other day. I think it was like my 30th gig or something.
Right.
Yeah, I think I owe you some money.
It wouldn't have been your finest hour. I've seen you do much better since.
Oh, yeah. Well, hopefully. I'd be a bit gutted if you gone, oh, no, that was it.
And you've plateaued.
That was the highlight.
When I saw you first, that was your peak, and you kind of dropped off and plateaued ever since.
No, good to see you. I've done better since
It was a blistering hot night, if you remember, the paid gig.
Do you know what?
Night.
I was really ill that night because at that time I was so bad with nerves that not only could I not eat before a gig, I still don't like to eat too close to a gig so I don't want to feel like full or anything, but I didn't drink either. I couldn't drink or anything, so I went up there, I hadn't drank for ages, and it was blistering heat and there was the lights on and I was wearing a full suit for some reason. I've never worn a suit ever again in comedy, and I just, you can see it in the video, at one point I'm sort of acting something out and this big like water just flops off my forehead. And I went out afterwards, and I went from there because a couple of my mates came to watch me. They never came back again to see me do stand up. And I went straight on to like alcohol, and I honestly had about two drinks.
Oh,
I was
so
dehydrated, and it was so hot, and I was in that suit. I think I went, I'm going to go home, and I went home and just passed out.
Yeah.
So, but still, it was a fun experience. It was fun to do. And but yeah, then that's where we met, and we've done many a gig since then. We've had some really, really fun gigs.
Yeah.
We've had some
slightly
that
strange
Christmas
ones.
Gig downstairs at the King's Head that I never want to think about.
You don't like that one, do you? I don't feel too badly about that one, but
the Christmas one. Nah, that was quite something. It's now time for the regular feature.
Oh, yes.
Which is, of course, are you, Graham Coolum, the ultimate Chelsea fan, according to the quiz as created by Children's BBC?
I'm terrified.
Ten questions, three categories. Get them all right and prove you are the ultimate Chelsea fan. But get one wrong. It's back to the start. Now, you don't get a second go at this.
I mean,
it's like a penalty shot. It's a sudden death.
So difficult. Okay.
So here we go. So nice, simple one to start.
Yeah,
sure. A picture of a stadium there. Question one. Where do Chelsea play their home matches? Is it Anfield or Stamford Bridge?
Really? I mean, that is a question. Well, okay, well, yeah. Stamford Bridge.
Stamford Bridge. Correct. Second question. There's a picture here of a friendly, cuddly looking
lion. I hope they're
all
that easy.
Stamford
the Lion, yeah.
Right, yep. So you've got Lion of the Lion, Barry the Blue, or Stamford the Lion.
Oh, no, Stamford.
Stamford the Lion. Okay, and 3 out of 10. Who is this player? I'm showing you a picture of a footballer now.
Oh, my glasses.
Four options.
That's fine, yeah, Pedro.
Pedro, right. Yeah. There's four options there, and you've picked Pedro. And you are correct. So we're now on to question four. If you get this, you've already beaten Jacob Hawley. So, which manager has been in charge of Chelsea on two separate occasions? Jose Mourinho, Rafael Benitez, or Andre Villas-Boas?
Jose, obviously.
Of course. Well done. You've now made it through to question number five.
Wow.
So when it gets a little bit tricky. What position did Chelsea finish in the 2017-2018 Premier League season? Were they third, were they fourth, or were they fifth? This has tricked a lot of people, this question.
2017-18. Anyway, so 18-19 was last season, wasn't it?
Yeah, so it's the season before. It's the third, fourth, or fifth.
Well, we went straight into Europa, didn't we? Or did we come out of the Champions League to go into Europa? I can't remember. We must have been fifth.
You're going to go for fifth? That's correct. If you get this right, you could be in our leaderboard. So, who was Chelsea's top scorer in the 2017-18 Premier League season? Was it Willian, Eden Hazard, or Morata?
In the 2017-18?
Yeah. So again, not last season.
Yeah. Well, it must have been Eden, surely.
It's correct.
Yay.
You know, question seven. I think that's you top of the leaderboard. Right, okay. This is a tricky one, I think. How many times have Chelsea won the FA Cup? Is it 6, 7, or 8 times?
70, 97, 2000. See, I can remember the early ones. That's weird, isn't it? How long have I got for this?
We're going to say you've got another 30 seconds.
Shit. Oh, sorry. That's a swearing. The middle of Villa, Everton, Portsmouth, Liverpool, United. I've got to 7 so far. How many have I got?
6, 7, or 8.
7.
7.
We've done that fucking... Can we not knock it?
Oh, have I gone?
Yes, you've gone. That's 6 out of 10. You passed halfway point, but stumbled just after.
It must be 8 then.
When it comes to FA Cup wins, this is Chelsea we're talking about. Think big. The answer was 8.
Who did I miss out? It was the time pressure that cost me there.
Yeah, we can't do forever, unfortunately, even though that is the kind of the positive of the podcast. But, Graham, don't worry.
Oh, no, I'm devastated. I'm devastated.
Because you still come away with a prize today. Oh. We talked about him a little bit earlier.
Yeah, but it's Europa League, isn't it? It's not Champions League.
No, you do technically walk away with something European prize related. So, first of all, it's your very own Di Matteo.
Di Matteo, it's Robbie.
Who managed you to Champions League victory.
Oh, wow, look at that.
So there's that for you. That is yours to take home. And your very own...
Oh, look at that.
Chelsea Football Club European Cup Winners' Cup final shirt from 1998.
Mate.
That is yours.
That is astonishing. Thank you.
That is for you.
Look at that. With the old style badge and everything. I've got an old... But no branding. That's good. No corporate... nonsense going on there.
No auto class, no calls, nothing like that. Look, so yeah, that is from 1998. That is the European Cup winners reissue shirt there. So it's a remake, but it's from the original manufacturers.
Well, I know.
And that is for you today, to say thank you for coming on my podcast. Thank you for giving me my first paid gig.
Oh, that's a pleasure.
So fingers crossed for another positive season next year for Chelsea.
Yeah. Something
exciting times with the young squad coming
through. Yeah, it'd be nice, wouldn't it?
It'd be very nice. So, mate, thanks very much for coming on.
Thank you very much.
A big thank you once again to Graham Coolum, a very good friend of mine and a bit of a mentor in comedy as well. One thing I wanted to mention, you might have noticed in the podcast there, I talked about a gig that we had together that was a bit of a disaster, and that was downstairs at the King's Head. In London. It was a Christmas gig, didn't go very, very well. But there was a lovely part of that evening, and that was that Graham had driven us down, and when we got back to the car, we were both feeling a little bit down, you know, a little bit bummed out about how the gig had gone. And Graham reached into the back of his car, and he pulled out a little lunchbox, and bless him, for the journey, he'd made me a ham sandwich, which I just thought was the loveliest thing. Have you ever had a car share with someone and they've given you a ham sandwich? I just thought that was the loveliest thing, and I had to mention that on this podcast because I just think it was a shit gig. But that ham sandwich, it made the night worth it. Now, hopefully, you're listening to this after lockdown has ended and Hungerford Comedy Club that Graham runs is back up and running. So if you're in the Berkshire area or Wiltshire area, it is worth a trip. He gets a good 120 to 150 people in there. You can find them online, search on Facebook or on Google, Hungerford Comedy Club, and find out when their next show is. If you are listening to this in lockdown, they are doing some online shows as well. Until next time, take care, and I'll see you soon for another episode of Those Comedians Talking About Bloody Football. Don't forget to drop us an email, though. comedianstalkingaboutfootball@gmail.com. You can find us on Instagram, CTAF_podcast, or you can find us on Facebook as well. Just search Comedians Talking About Football. You guys take care of yourself, and I'll speak to you soon.
Sports Social Podcast Network.